Morning. It's kind of odd this morning that I've got two lecturers of mine sitting here, and I feel like the role reversal is a little bit uncomfortable, but it's very good to welcome you guys here. So we're picking up on Jonah 2, from what Phil was saying last week. Now, if you can remember, or you know the story, if you weren't here last week, Jonah is called to go and speak to Nineveh and the people of Nineveh, and he decides that he perhaps doesn't like the plan that God's got for him, and he jumps on a boat and he heads to Tarshish, which is completely the opposite direction. He hops on a boat, which Phil kindly reminded us is a very dangerous place to hop on at those in that time. And he goes into the middle of the sea, thinking that he can escape God, and all starts going wrong. Big storm. The crew, who are desperate, throw their cargo overboard, which just shows how serious the situation was. Has anyone ever been in a storm or a big sea? Have you ever been on a ferry? Yeah, it's not pleasant, is it? You know, when the waves start coming over, the sea suddenly turns. It can be really beautiful, can't it? We can sort of have these beach holidays where it's still and we sort of put a rubber dinghy out there and, you know, we can enjoy it. And there's other times when the sea just starts rising up and the waves come and it's dark and it seems so chaotic and scary and difficult. And we find that suddenly Jonah's in this situation and he's thrown overboard by the crew. And suddenly the sea becomes still. And the crew give their lives over to God, knowing that he is all-powerful. And so we pick up the story at that point, and we have this sort of interlude in the story of this sort of psalm-like prayer of Jonah, which is up on the screen. Let's read it together. It says, "Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from inside the fish. He said, 'I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble, and he answered me. I called to you from the land of the dead, and Lord, you heard me. You threw me into the ocean depths, and I sank down to the heart of the sea. The mighty waters engulfed me. I was buried beneath your wild and stormy waves. Then I said, O Lord, you have driven me from your presence, yet I will look once more towards your holy temple. I sank beneath the waves, and the waters closed over me. Seaweed wrapped itself around my head. I sunk down to the very roots of the mountains. I was imprisoned in the earth, whose gates lock shut forever. But you, O Lord, my God, snatch me from the jaws of death. As my life was slipping away, I remembered the Lord, and my earnest prayer went out to you in your holy temple. Those who worship false gods turn their back on God's mercies, but I will offer sacrifices to you with songs of praise, and I fulfill all my vows. For my salvation comes from the Lord alone.' Then the Lord ordered the fish to spit Jonah out onto the beach." I want to open up a couple of things to you this morning. This is written in past tense. So Jonah's obviously not sitting in a fish writing this exactly at that time. He's probably lacking a pen and paper at this point. But he's writing this afterwards, and we just get the idea of just what he's going through, this experience that he's having to go through. And I want to look at this morning at what we can learn from that. Let me just show you a picture. I have no idea, I'm afraid, what the fish was like and how big it was, but obviously big enough for Jonah to fit in. It gives you an idea of a fish whale that could perhaps swallow a human being. But we don't know whether he was in the stomach, whether he was in the mouth, how big this fish was. But can you just imagine for a moment what it must have been like for him? I think when I was a child, we had Sunday school images, and I don't know if you were the same. Andy did a great job this morning of sort of dispelling that. But I had this image of Jonah inside a whale sitting on a crate with a candle. Does anyone else have that image? Am I the only one? Yeah, thanks, Rod. Yeah, and we sort of get this idea that he's sitting there and it's light and there's a few bones and a fish sort of swimming around. That's not really the reality, is it? When you start looking at this, I don't know if anyone's been caving Have anyone been caving when you go down small sort of tunnels and it's you turn your head torch off, it's pitch black, it's damp, it's smelly, it's isolating, it's really lonely. And I think these are some of the things that we can imagine that Jonah must have been feeling. I mean, was it stable? Was he sitting down? Was he bobbing around in there? Was he unconscious? We kind of don't have many details, but we can imagine that it was probably stinking, that it probably felt very, very weird, and it must have felt a very, very long way from the land being inside this fish. If you've ever imagined what hell must feel like, must it be like, I think you sort of get the picture somewhere there of being inside this whale with all these different things, these fish, and being inside and all the sort of feelings that he's getting of loneliness. Now, to a certain extent, we haven't been in a fish. That isn't necessarily our experience. But to a point, we'll have all experienced what Jonah has gone through, this feelings of loneliness, of despair, of being away from everyone, of being in a sort of shroud of what it feels like darkness that we can't quite escape, whether that's through illness, family troubles, marriage breakdowns, loved ones dying, cancer. Things will have gone on in our lives that will have put us into a place that's very similar to where Jonah was, away from everything and being very despairing. This week has been a tough week for us as a family. My brother-in-law is currently still in hospital, having had a massive operation to remove some cancer. And as a family this week, we've gone through a very difficult, dark patch. And he, thankfully, is coming out the other side of that. But he's been in hospital there. You know what it can be like, very lonely. Suddenly you're isolated and you just want to be out there and be at home, but you can't. You're sitting there just, you've got the nights where you're on these drugs and you just think too much, and it can be a very dark place. And we'll have all gone through times like that in our lives. So what can we learn from Jonah? Well, I think there's two words particularly that I just want to bring out this morning. One is Jonah's call for help. If you noticed in Jonah 2:1, it's the turning point in the story. Up to that point, Jonah has been running away from God, even to the point where he's being thrown into the sea. His relationship with God is still very non-committal. He's not really responding to God. He's not calling out to God. He's just talking about God. Who is your God? Well, he's the God of, I worship him. He's the God of the land and the sea. But he's not really kind of engaging with God. And at this point, Jonah 2:1, then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from inside the fish. I cried out. He cries out at this point. You must have been driving at some point and you've got lost. And the person next to you says, why don't we just ask for help? Why don't you just pull over? Look, there's a local. Let's pull over. So I'll put the window down. Let's ask for help. No. I've got this. I don't need help. I know where I'm going. I know where I'm going. I don't need help.
Only the men.
Obviously, only the men. But we've all been there, haven't we? Particularly the men. We don't want to ask for help. It's a very difficult thing to do. And Jonah has gone through this whole kind of journey so far, and he hasn't called out. And it's got to the point where, if we read the story, he's maybe not even just being in the sea, but he's actually sinking down into the sea. He's drowning under the waves. Maybe the currents are still crazily sort of moving around underneath, and he's being swirled around, seaweeds going around his neck. And finally, he says to God, help. He calls out to God. Can we relate to that? How far do we have to go through situations before we call out to God and say, help. I think help comes when there is no other options to us, doesn't it? It should be before. It probably should be before, maybe with partners, definitely with God. And we need to say, you know what, I can't do this by myself. I need your help. Is it in just rosy times that we ask for help, or does it come to the point for Jonah where he's actually sinking down that he calls out to God? And I think there's a really important point here that Jonah calls out to God, doesn't he, as he's under the sea and he's in that darkness. And he calls out to God and God rescues him, but in darkness. He's rescued by the fish, and yet he's still having to experience that dark place. He's perhaps a little bit safer. He can probably breathe again. He can obviously breathe again. But he's still in a dark, lonely place. And that kind of struck me this week. I had this talk planned out, and I thought I could kind of formulate a nice, well, we go through dark times, God teaches us about the dark times, we come out of the dark times, and everything's rosy. That isn't necessarily the case, is it? I think we can all say, if I stood here and said that, it might sound kind of nice, but it's a bit trite. The fact is, and I think what I've realised this week, is we can't formulate a nice kind of pattern of how things will happen. That's not how life works, is it? And in Jonah's case, it's the same. He calls out to God, rescue me, save me. And what happens? He's swallowed by a fish. Then what's he thinking? Well, hang on a minute, it's still dark, it's still lonely. And I think that's sometimes a little bit like the life that we go through. But the important thing is that he has actually been rescued. He's in a journey, and things are going to come to a head, as we'll see, and he will be saved. But he's in the rescuing plan at this point. Next word I'd like to bring out is sorry. It's another difficult word to say, isn't it? How often do we say sorry? Sorry, I think, is such a good word because it says, not my way, I was wrong, but your way. And Jonah 2:4, Jonah says, then I said, O Lord, you have driven me from your presence, yet I will look once more towards your holy temple. This is the part where Jonah's saying, sorry. If you read between the lines, it's the point where he says, okay, I went my way thinking that I knew best and that you knew wrong. What you knew wasn't so good for me. But now I want to look to your temple again. He said help. He's called out to the Lord. And now there's this repentance. This, okay, I was wrong. How difficult is that one? How difficult is it for us to say sorry to the ones we love? I need to say sorry to my family this week because when I'm preparing to speak, I don't know, I get single-minded about it and it takes up so much of my time and so much of my attention, and I have to say sorry. I have to say sorry to my family sometimes for getting into a, not a godly mind, but into a mind where it's just all the attention goes on that, and I leave them behind sometimes. Lou and I have to say sorry to each other so often because life just kind of gets in the way sometimes. And we haven't done anything necessarily wrong, but sometimes we just need to say to each other, you know what, I'm sorry. Just been a bit preoccupied recently and haven't been giving you the full attention. You know what, I think God uses and had used this situation in Jonah's life to bring him to a sorry, to bring him to a point where he said, okay, your ways are right, my ways aren't right, and I will turn back to you. I think we can... We know now why baptism and communion are so important in the life of the church, because it is our sorry to God. And when we witness someone being baptized and they stand up, they're saying, this is my testimony. I was wrong living life the way I was living it, and God's way was right, is right, and I want to pursue that. And we do that as well when we take the Lord's Supper. When we take communion together, we're not just reminded of our own sin, but we're also responding to what God has done for us. We're able to say, our response can be, sorry, you know, you've done so much for me. Sorry. And then probably, you know, thank you. Thank you for what you have done for us. Maybe this morning, there's a sorry that you need to make. Maybe there's a sorry you need to make to God. Maybe it's a sorry to someone else. But it seems that in the times when you are so close to death, when darkness surrounds us, you just think about when people come to the end of their lives, or they know that they have a terminal illness, something like that. What do? They say, I just need to go and right some wrongs. I need to go and speak to someone. I need to go and say sorry to that person, because the life that I lived, the way that I treated them, actually everything suddenly comes into perspective, doesn't it? And lives are reorientated. What's important suddenly changes, and actually we go back to... So often it takes us back to God to say sorry. Responding to God, who's always with us, I just wanted to bring this out as well, that in Jonah 2:7, it says, as my life was slipping away, I remembered the Lord, and my earnest prayer went out to your holy temple. Earnest prayer. What is earnest prayer? Can you think of times in your life when it's not just been a, please God, could you do this, but please God, please will you do this? An example for me would have been when Jude was born. Now, none of our boys, none of their births have been particularly straightforward, but Jude particularly was a really, really tough time. And without going into too much detail, it was a very kind of emergency cesarean for Lou. And we were in the room, and suddenly we had a monitor on Lou that was just showing the heartbeat of Jude, as we now know. And we're watching this heartbeat, and the doctors and nurses are saying, it's okay, you know, he's okay, it's okay. And then suddenly the heartbeat disappeared, and they said, okay, we need to get him out now. And we were in this little room, and I was literally sort of escorted into the bathroom where they kind of half closed the door, and they started scrubbing down and then wheeled Lou away. And they rushed off, and I was literally, I sort of came out of this bathroom. This is no exaggeration. I came out of this bathroom not knowing where they'd gone, and I sort of walked into this room, and it's like, where's Lou gone? Where's my baby? What's happened? It was probably one of the most dark times, because I just wanted to be there with them, and I couldn't be. And so what did I do? I knelt down, and I gave the most earnest prayer that I've ever given. It was, please, God, save my little boy. Save my wife. Be there. Look after them, please. And I can only explain that earnestness, that reality, that realness of prayer is so often probably how God wants us to pray, how God wants us to be. And Jonah does that, doesn't he? I also picked up the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning because I didn't know what to do, and phoned my good friend Charlie. I think you can do that with best friends, can't you? If there's a sign of a good friend, it's that you can pick up the phone whatever time of day or night it is and you can talk. And so I phoned him up in tears and just said, please just pray with me because I just don't know what's going on. And so we do need earnest prayer, but we also need I don't think we should forget this. Good Christian friends around us to go through difficult times with, who will pray with us, who will be with us, who will pray earnestly with us and support us. And I think there's a thank you. Jonah 2:9 says, "And I will offer you sacrifices with, but I will offer sacrifices to you with songs of praise, and I will fulfill all my vows, for my salvation comes from the Lord alone." You know, he's gone through so much. He said his help prayer, and God has been good and rescued him. He said his sorry prayer, and God has forgiven him, rescued him, forgiven him, put him back on track again. And he does the same for us. And he says, thank you. He says, I will worship you again. I will offer sacrifices to you. I will sing to you. I will praise you. Through this week, my brother-in-law, as I said, has been very, very ill. But one of the most fantastic things that has come out of that is the rallying round of people being around him. So we set up a WhatsApp prayer for him. And I think there was, about 60 people on this WhatsApp. And we set up, everyone's praying for him anyway, but we set up a 24-hour prayer for him during this sort of, during the operation period and particularly. And it turned into 26 or 27 hours of prayer. And it wasn't just one person per slot. Multiple people kept going on to this and adding on. So we had two, three people for each hour praying for him. Now on this WhatsApp, I hadn't realized when I sort of got involved in setting this up, but it was actually set up for all of his work colleagues. So all of his work colleagues and his friends were actually on this WhatsApp. And suddenly, we're all kind of jumping in there with prayer requests and everything else. And there's a whole bunch of people who aren't Christians on there. And the prayers for him, the "I will stay up in the middle of the night and pray for you," was profoundly, what's the right word? It's been very profound for the people who have looked in who haven't got a faith to see the amount of love for their friend, for their brother, for their sister, for their uncle, etc. And it speaks beyond words. And so John has gone through a very, very tough time this week, but he's now able to pick up his phone and see what people have prayed for him, what people have done for him, the way that people have stood up next to him, who were there, put their arm around him. And I tell you what, that is now helping him to praise God, to say, yeah, you're with me. You've been with me, and I've got people with me. That's really important. And finally, the last verse, and this has got to be the funniest of the whole lot, really. "Then the Lord ordered the fish to spit Jonah out onto the beach." He's rescued. He's been through an ordeal. He's been through an unbelievable, mind-blowing experience. And he's on the beach now, spat out from a fish. I mean, can you even imagine what that must have felt like? Can you imagine looking around and just sort of seeing this fish just disappearing back under the water? But he's on solid ground. And I think the really important thing to notice from this is that from the experience, he's reorientated back towards God again. He's reorientated back and he says, okay, now I'm going to go and do what you've asked me to go and do. Now, Phil can pick up on that next week because it doesn't all go well. But at this point, anyway, he's back on track again, isn't he? So these dark times that he's had, that we have, help to reorientate us back towards God and for his truths, back into his will again. And also, he now has a better understanding of suffering, of darkness, that he can then witness to other people. And the same for us as well, that we can through the difficult times that we go through the experiences, through knowing that actually once we have been through them, and it, I don't know how long it might be, but that God is with us throughout and that he will hold us, and to be able to share that in the right time with other people who are going through the same thing is incredibly powerful, powerful to be able to share our experience. And so I want to leave you with a question this morning, but as a response, we're going to listen to a song in a moment, but I want to leave you with a question. Is there, from this story that we've read, is there a help that you need to call out? Is there a sorry that you need to make to God? Is there something that you need to do to reorientate back towards God? Or is it going to take an experience so drastic? Or can we do it through times that are a little bit more rosy, when things are better? Can we still kind of reorientate? What will it take to get our attention, to turn us back towards God again? That's the question I want to leave you with this morning. But we need to remember, most of all, that he's a rescuing God. When we say sorry, he's a forgiving God. When we say help, he rescues. When we say sorry, he forgives, and he's there for us.